No, no. Hi, our speaker today, Catherine, will share her experience, strength, and hope on the physical allergy and codependency. Take it away, Catherine. And you'll be timing yourself. Okay.
Hi, I'm Catherine. I'm a grateful member of Al-Anon since the 1990s, and a recovered codependent today, thanks to working the BBA around my codependency. And I'm in a workshop right now, and we're on physical craving. So I was trying to think, how could I apply physical craving to my Al-Anon-ism in a traditional Al-Anon meeting? I mean, because before I got to BBA, I was in Al-Anon, traditional Al-Anon for a very, very long time. Started meetings, was in service positions, and my father was an alcoholic. He died of alcoholism. And then I went through a period of time where I thought I didn't have any active drinkers in my life, and then now my brother seems to have developed it, and then his son is also a drug addict. So I have active alcoholics in my family again. So, and any of you who it doesn't really matter. I mean, I'm also in AA for 30 years, and anyone in AA, you might not think of yourself as an Al-Anon, but really, I don't know anybody in AA who doesn't care about another alcoholic because they're in AA, and they a lot of their friends are alcoholics. So I see a lot of untreated Al-Anonism in AA as well. So when we get to, I didn't cause it, I can't control it, I can't cure it, this is one of the basic slogans of Al-Anon that we talk about when we first get here. I didn't, and it's the first step, right? I didn't cause it. I didn't cause addiction. Addiction is a dis you know, ad addiction is a disease, designated by the American Medical Association, and in Europe as well. It's a disease. It's a mental illness. Actually, it is the most fatal mental illness. It might there because so many people die of addiction. So I didn't cause it. I can't control it. I am powerless over addiction, right? I'm powerless over addiction. I'm power and in AA they say, or Al-Anon, we say we're powerless over alcohol, no matter who drinks it, right? But I'm powerless over addiction, no matter who's using it. It doesn't matter if I'm powerless over my own addiction, right? My own addictive to codependent, the codependent process, right? And the codependent process, and so I'm powerless over my own addiction, just as I'm powerless over another person's addiction. And I can't cure it, right? I can't cure the addiction. So that, and that is m even more applicable to controller fixers, because I work primarily with controller fixers on the steps like this now, because there's less people who work the steps this way. And controller fixers really are stuck in the delusion that they somehow can control their addiction. That somehow, if I, and I know myself that I came to Al-Anon, and they told me at Al-Anon, if I zip my lip, right, and I didn't tell the alcoholic what to do, then I was being a good Al-Anon and I was detaching. But that wasn't detachment. That wasn't the spiritual gift of detachment. That was just like I wasn't nagging, right? And I tried not to say anything, and I thought that I was in recovery because I wasn't saying anything to the crazy people in my life, right? So I wasn't saying anything, therefore I wasn't controlling them, therefore I wasn't a controller. But I was actively controlling in my mind, right? Like I was awake at night in my bed, spinning with all the ways that I would change their story if I could. So even meanwhile, I'm actively attending Al-Anon, actively attending AA, I'm still trying to control and fix the story in my mind. I know better than everyone else how their life would be better if they would just do, my suggestions, even though I wasn't even saying anything. And then I would actually even do, I look at it as spiritual stalking. I would do spiritual stalking because I would pray for outcomes for people. I wouldn't pray for knowledge of God's will for us and the power to carry it out. I would pray for specific outcomes for them that I knew better, that that would be better for them if God would do it my way. I would give God recommendations on how it should go. And then I have a sponsee. When I told her that I was doing this subject, she said, "I want you to talk about, I did a fourth C in Al-Anon. I don't contribute to it, right? Like I don't contribute to the addiction. Let's say of another person, I don't contribute their addiction by enabling, for example." But then I can think about it. I was thinking about it in terms of myself because once I turned the codependency around, the codependent addiction upon myself, my own mental obsession and spiritual malady and physical craving. Once I turned the addiction on myself, I realized that, it's like, well, how am I contributing to my own addiction? What am I doing, to cling to the delusion of control, right? And so then that was very interesting. It was a very interesting way to start praying. One of the things that was vital to me in my early recovery, once we started like the emotional sobriety meeting and we had an active meeting where I was focusing every week on recovering this way, is I was doing the set aside prayer at least 6 times a day. I would put an alarm into my phone and I would have the set aside prayer come up 6 times a day. And no matter what I was doing, I would just pause. It would take less than 15 seconds, something like this. I would just pause in my day and just say, well, what's the old idea that's operating here? And I was shocked at how much like the soundtrack of my life was about control, controlling the story, controlling, what was going on. And it was just like, because it was very easy in a 10th step in the morning and in 10, 11 in the evening, it was very easy to like in that moment, oh yes, I'm very detached, right? But then when I'm like in the active hubbub of the day, right? And I'm in the IEP meeting at my son's school. Yeah. Oh, where's the delusion of control operating there? And it was just like, and just to set that aside, the grace that came in that moment of just like, wow, there it is again, Control. There it is, my addiction. So when we talk about it was very easy for me to see in the 30 years I was in Al-Anon, it was very easy to see mental obsession in my Al-Anonism. What was harder to see, and I want to address for us, was the physical craving, because the key that unlocked recovery for me, why I consider myself a recovered codependent today, is as long as I was in Al-Anon and I was focused on this, qualifier, a person outside of myself that wasn't doing my will, I was still in my addiction. But when I got to BBA and we started doing it the emotional sobriety way, it was like I turned it around and it's my codependent addiction. My obsession belongs to me. But behind that, what I couldn't see was the physical craving. So the physical craving that we talk about, like in the emotional sobriety meeting, is there are neurotransmitters, right? And it actually, one literature that talks about it is the ACA Red Book talks about the internal drugstore, right? That there's, dopamine and oxytocin and cortisol and epinephrine. And when we're in a state of hypervigilance, right? Or if you want to put it in a BBA way, when I'm in that fear, that unremitting fear all the time, I'm in a state of hypervigilance all the time. And that hypervigilance has like cortisol and adrenaline going all the time. And so, of course, I'm seeking these kind of like other things like dopamine and other things to relieve that. So that's where that set aside prayer 6 times a day made such a difference, right? Because then it was like I paused and I also like felt my body. I would start at the top and I would just kind of, it really, it was just 10 seconds. It wasn't a long thing, but just like feeling it and how much of it was stuck in my throat and how much of it was stuck in my stomach. Just like feeling how I was clenched all the time. And what is that clenching in my body but control, right? That's the addiction to control. This delusion that somehow if I'm hyper vigilant all the time, that I'm in control. At this meeting, we don't read the characteristics of chaos creators, but I'm going to read them for you because I found it so useful to me in identifying my own addiction, right? So on physical craving. So here, what are some of the things we do to create chaos in our lives? Here are some examples: being chronically late or regularly late, overspending, worrying, controlling, fixing, agreeing to do or take on too much, not saying no when you know you should, having weak or unclear boundaries, giving advice knowing what's right for everyone else, arguing with a drunk, neglecting responsibilities or relationships, ignoring physical problems, hoping they will go away or fix themselves, picking a fight, manipulating others, trying to control something or someone to get the outcome you desire, attempting to make something or everything perfect, obsessing, projecting, wallowing in self-pity, taking things personally, being a martyr, ignoring important tasks like paying bills or taxes, lacking self-care, such as not getting enough sleep, obsession with doing or being productive, judging and placing expectations, talking too much without speaking our truth, straight up lying or lying by omission, disconnection from our bodies, being in our head all the time. Chemically or hormonally, you may get a surge of adrenaline pumping through our bodies when we engage in these behaviors, and we get addicted to that feeling. We get addicted to the feeling of hypervigilance. Isn't that interesting? So here I was, like, when I got to this, the when we started the emotional sobriety meeting in San Diego 9 years ago. So my son was in third grade and he's a freshman in college now. So we've been doing it a while. And when we would read this, it was just like seeing how actively every single thing in my body was sort of like clenched and actively controlling the story in every aspect. And of course, when you're in the delusion of control, right, you're driven to think that way. You don't have a choice. So I didn't cause it. I can't control it. I can't cure it. I can't cure my own codependency. There's no amount of doing it perfect, doing the steps, that's going to cure it. The process of recovery is all 12 steps, right? It isn't just the first step experience. It's all 12 steps. I didn't get most of my, like, relief, detachment, right? As they talk about now, most of that detachment and sanity returned as a result of the 12th step, right? So we're not gonna, on a first step meeting, I'm not gonna be able to describe perfectly recovery, but I do think that I describe recovery from codependency as neutrality, as described in the 10th step, like a position of neutrality. Like, I'm not avoiding it, nor am I trying to control it. I'm in a position of neutrality. And then you have choices, right? Like, when sanity returns, then you start to have choices again. And the feeling of being recovered from codependency was a miracle that I actually thought was, I always thought that I was going to have to, really be active in an Al-Anon program and have a lot of sponsors, and I never thought that I would, like, react sanely and normally to those codependent situations, because I was so deeply, my neural pathways were so deeply programmed to that hypervigilance. So then when I started experiencing what I call emotional sobriety, or maybe spiritual neutrality, it was a miracle beyond, all expectations. And that's why I primarily work the steps with people on this today, because the relief was so palpable. I mean, in AA, I can clearly see that if you want to get sober, it's available to you in AA. There's plenty of evidence for that. But to be relieved of that kind of constant mental obsession that I had was beyond my wildest dreams. And I'm so grateful. And I think that that's it. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Catherine.